Hey everybody, welcome to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm Matt Michaels with Sin City Steve and Rob Bossolari. And we have been kind of doing some pre-records here for the upcoming holidays to fill in some episodes while we're off enjoying our festivities. Right now we're going to do a little thing here on who we believe are some of the all-time greatest managers in professional wrestling. So we each came up with a list of anywhere between apparently 10 and 25 names, something like that. we tried to tell Rob a lower number, so because we figured that when he tells us why about each one, that would give us about 3 hours. So we just kind of cut that number down. And then Steve decided, well, you know what, managers, I can come up with 96 names. So Steve decided to go.
I couldn't. I'm like, well, I got like 15. And after that, I was like, the steam was running out. And I'm like, can I even count some of these people?
I mean, you have to scratch the bottom of the barrel when you're getting down that far.
All right. So with that said, let's do it this way. Steve, how many are on your list?
So I came up with 20.
20. Okay. I got 20 as well. And Rob, you got 15?
Yeah, I actually got 17.
17. All right. So we're going to do it this way. We're going to start at the bottom. I'll give my 20. Steve, you'll give your 20. That type of thing. When we hit 17, Rob, you know, chime in, then you'll start your list at that point. All right.
All right.
So number 20, I go with Sable. Sable is the one who really kind of, you know, ushered in that whole idea that not only would the female, what was valet, become kind of more so a manager, but then becomes a wrestler as well, and became one of the most popular, fixins of the WWE Attitude Era. And, you know, thank God we got a Playboy. Three, right? I mean, I think she did three spreads because she did one with Tori, didn't she?
So that's right.
We got a lot of Sable. And Vince apparently got a lot of Sable, and Brock definitely got a lot of Sable. So she definitely needs to, I think, be included on my top 20. Steve, who you got at 20?
All right. So kind of a hot take. Somebody that is still in the game, somebody that is no longer in WWE. Somebody who is synonymous with WWE, but have recently gone to the dark side to join AEW. And I'm talking about the leader of the Hurt Syndicate, MVP.
Okay. All
MVP. Right, MVP. I think he has single-handedly helped to add a new dimension to Bobby Lashley's character and his career. I think that the book is still being written for MVP. And I think that by the time that it's all said and done, if we do this list again, he will be moving up this list for sure.
I just want to jump in right quick. I just remembered three people right off the top. So I'm going to match you guys at 20.
All right. 20.
For me, as of late, she's been really good. Sonya Deville. She's been putting a lot of women over, building some teams. What she's doing now with Pure Fusion Collective, and what she's done before with Chelsea Green. It's not even just tag matches. She really is the manager and the mouthpiece for a lot of the women's division that we see these days.
All right. That's fair enough. Steve, 19.
19. I have Mr. Fuji. Obviously, Mr. Fuji was a sneaky, devious manager in WWF, managed WWF Tag Team Champions, as well as managing Yokozuna during his world championship runs as well. So, he definitely belongs on this list.
Rob, you're 19.
Going to go with that same theme I had before, Bayley. Bayley's been putting over a lot of the women, what she did with Damage Control. teaming up with Dakota Kai and getting all the Japanese wrestler, female wrestlers under one umbrella was really good. And her matches in the ring, it's having an active manager role in both of these women. So that's why she's my 19.
And for 19, I've got Luscious Johnny V, Johnny Valiant. When I was a kid, I got to say there was nothing better than Beefcake and Valentine. And Luscious Johnny V was the mouthpiece. You know, again, anytime you have a manager who is flamboyant and just knows how to, you know, talk, especially at that time, Greg Valentine's never been a good mouthpiece. And Brutus wasn't in the Barber character yet. So he had, you know, limited personality going on. And, you know, he had some of the other guys, you know, through that early 85, 86, 87 time period. But he also filled in commentary, you know, did a lot of the like Madison Square Garden and the Boston, you know, shows. And you can go back and you can watch those, and he's just fucking entertaining. Good guy. And the Valiants, of course, always had a great reputation with the WWE. So, all right, number 18, Rob.
I'm going to steal one of yours, Sable. You know, she really, there was no Mark Mero without Sable, and she really built his career. And that was, you know, one of the most iconic couplings in the 90s were those two.
Okay. Steve.
So actually, I have Eazy-E, Eric Bischoff. Obviously, he is forever tied to the NWO with great reason. And largely, that was what I chose to focus on with this selection and him making the list. Obviously, he was in an on-air capacity and other promotions as well. But realistically, the Eazy-E persona when he was doing his thing, running the NWO, without a doubt.
And I have to go with Sonny. I think Sonny was just, you know, for that short period of time, you know, she was, again, the most downloaded person on AOL. Back, you know, in 96, 97 ish. Anytime that you can take, a person like that, put her with tag teams, you know, think about it, Smoking Guns. So, you know, Billy Gunn obviously got managed by her. Then you had her managing Farouk when he first came in. Then you had her with LOD 2000. So they elevated her beyond just being with Candido and Skip and Zip, you know, but just, you know, what an iconic, run. And, unfortunately, she didn't have sunny days in her future. Let's go. Number 17. My 17 is the one and only Teddy Long. Teddy Long, you know, what he did in the WWE is a direct, you know, it just comes from what he did in WCW. Managing Doom, just the fucking best. That tag team will forever be one of my favorites. And a lot of it does have to do with Teddy. He comes to WWE and referees for a long period of time and then transitions into a manager and then eventually general manager. He's a legend and, you know, I don't think he still gets enough credit for the mind that he has that impacted professional wrestling. So shout out to my guy, Teddy. All right, Rob, you're 17.
Guido from Bullet Club. As in ring and as a manager of David Finley right now, Jay White, and helping build and maintain that amazing faction. You can't even be a Bullet Club member without, you know, going through him, really. So it's not even, as far as I understand, not even a kayfabe thing. He really is that influential in modern times.
Steve, you're 17.
Michael Hayes. as if you know, going from Ghetto to Michael Hayes, that's quite a jump there. But realistically, people know him obviously for his time in the Fabulous Freebirds. People know him as being a backstage producer. Something that people don't really remember is he was actually the manager for the Hardy Boys when they first broke into WWE and helped to set them on a course for success. So not enough respect has been given to Michael Hayes and his contributions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they never did a Michael Cup for the Hardy Boys like they did with the Terry Cup. So, I think Michael would have thought he was hot enough to get his own Wrestle For Me thing going there. Exactly. All right, number 16. Rob, you're 16.
My 16, we're going to go with Melissa Coates, a.k.a. Jeannie. She was the manager and attaché for Sabu. So you were not going to have a Sabu match without Jeannie until, God rest her, Melissa Coates.
Yeah.
ECW royalty.
Yeah, Melissa she was so sweet. Still sad that she passed away when she did. Just such a nice person, and meant a lot to Sabu in his life. So, Steve, you're 16.
All right. So now we're getting into repeating some, but I have to echo your sentiment on Sunny. I think that you hit the nail right on the head. She was the sex symbol that WWF New Generation needed as they segued into the Attitude Era. Obviously she acted as that bridge, and you mentioned most downloaded woman. Obviously everything that she did with the Body Donnas and continuing with Chris Candido, even into ECW, doing the stuff that they did there was quite memorable as well. She deserves to be on this list, and hopefully she can get whatever assistance that she needs.
Yeah, and she is a WWE Hall of Famer too. So
yes, she is.
Can't deny that. Number 16 for me is Miss Elizabeth, the lovely Elizabeth. You know, again, we're mentioning all these female names here. Well, she is the original for WWE at least, and. The best thing about when Elizabeth came in, there was no mention of who she was, right? You didn't know who Elizabeth was. And all the managers in the WWE, all the heel managers were trying to sign Randy Savage. That was the gimmick for the first like month to 6 weeks. And then it turns out that his manager is the lovely Miss Elizabeth. And boy, just great things they could do with her. First off, him, what a heel move, putting her in front of you. Oh, just fucking fabulous stuff. And then, you know, having her mix in and go get Hogan, and that starts the connection between Hogan and Savage as the mega powers. And then, the luster, oof, the luster, you know, oof. Yeah, I knew. And of course, you know, you see the footage of Hogan's hand on her ass while he's holding her up on the shoulder, and, you know, just brilliant stuff. Even down to the most memorable wedding, right? You know, just one of the most memorable weddings. And then afterwards, you know, having the snake pop out and as the wedding gift from Jake the Snake, you know, just great stuff. And then of course going to WCW and becoming a baddie with the NWO, and then unfortunately meeting her untimely end too soon. So that's the 16. All right. My 15 is Skando Akbar, one of the most notorious guys throughout the 80s And then eventually would be in the corner. I think Scando was in the corner of was he? No. Scando in the corner of Slaughter? Was that Akbar?
It was Adnan, Akbar? Right?
Yeah, that was Adnan.
Yeah.
So I mean, Adnan's another one who could go right up there too. So
yeah.
But Akbar down in Texas, man, some of the stuff that they did was just great and memorable and just fucking, again, some of these guys, what you did in the '80s, just, you can't do today. All right. Rob, what's your 15?
I had to swap it because I thought he's a little bit more important. Conan, LAX manager. He did so much in TNA, pushing the careers of Homicide, Hernandez, Santana, and Ortiz, and put, you know, Santana Ortiz on the map, really. LAX was ubiquitous with the indies, and then they made it to TV, and he even found his way into a few promos in AEW. You know, not even forgetting all the work he did at NWO. He was a famous wrestler already, so he definitely deserves to be on my list.
Steve, you're 15.
All right, so mine is let's put my hand over my heart for Dutch Mantel. We the people. Yeah, honestly though, Dutch has been a great mind in the pro wrestling business for quite some time. Of course, who can forget his in-ring stuff, but also according to some folks there, he did manage a guy named Jack Swagger for one of the least memorable title reigns in the history of WWE. So, you know, that's at least on this list, but it does go down on the list as him being a manager for a world heavyweight champion. So Dutch definitely makes the list.
Sure. All right. Number 14, Rob.
We're going to go with Father James Mitchell. Father James Mitchell is just so freaking ubiquitous in wrestling. Everything from TNA managing Sting, Abyss, all of these things that he did. Extreme Championship Wrestling as a Sinister Minister. This guy has been across so many promotions and has been involved in so many great matches and wrestlers that he's on my list.
I'll go with number 14, Fonzie. You can't go wrong with Fonzie managing Sabu and RVD and, you know, going again for the story from a guy going from a ref to a manager and making the impact that Fonzie had, you know, really, really, really put, you know, a big fucking thing on Taz, you know, just a light, you know, giving Taz a big spotlight, giving Rob a big spotlight, and Sabu, man. You just can't think about those three guys without hearing that Fonzie voice and just that Sabu, baby. All right, Steve,
hell yeah.
14.
Speaking of individuals that went from referee to manager, for me at this spot is Teddy Long. So obviously we mentioned, the great things that he did. But that run with Doom in WCW, man, that was the makings of something great. And, they definitely were, so can't really say too much else.
Let's see, Rob, who's your next one up?
Well, after that, and I doubled it up, so I deleted one later on, but Arn Anderson is making my list. What he's done for Cody Rhodes, he has, you know, the great career as the Four Horsemen with Ric Flair. But, you know, he mentored people like Triple H and Randy Orton. He really was a big deal with the Revival in 2016, 2017. And, again, the work now with Cody Rhodes, it's he's been a big manager.
Steve, you're 13.
For me here, I am going to go with Captain Lou Albano. Realistically, there are very few people that are more integral to the WWF's national expansion in the 80s than Captain Lou. And I think that he doesn't receive as much praise, quite honestly, as what he deserves. because yeah, he definitely played a major role in that. And manager of champions, numerous WWF tag team and world champions. So definitely.
Yeah. And I go with my 13, the Doctor of Style, Slick. Can't go wrong with the Jive Soul bro. And, you know, going from Blassie into Slick, essentially, that's where the stable went to. And to have the Sheik and Volkov, and then Sheik gets fired, and you bring in the other Bolshevik, and, you know, you have Slick managing the Russians. Brilliant. What are you going to do?
Awesome. Man?
Brilliant. Rob, you're number 12.
Well, I cannot forget Paul Ellering. And not for what he's been doing now, but obviously the Road Warriors, what he did in putting over the, you know, the careers for the Legion and the War Warrior Hawk and Animal. It's just a big a deal in the 80s and early 90s tag team wrestling. And he's so synonymous with that famous tag team. I wish we could get more work out of him now and have him, you know, speaking or doing a little bit more. But he's a big-time manager.
Steve.
Excuse me. I can't do it with the screech.
I forgot.
So Vicky fucking Guerrero belongs on this list. She is an amazing individual. She's a friend of the show. And she is one of the most hated and loved at the same time characters in WWE, managing Edge, Dolph Ziggler, many other champions. She has to be on this list.
Right. And my my number 12 is J.J. Dillon. You know, got to look at the Horsemen and what J.J. meant to, you know, putting those guys on the map. And even though they didn't need a mouthpiece, he just brought a sense of validity to this group, being that much more classy and higher than everyone else. And then, you know, JJ goes on and has his various roles through the run of WCW and in WWE as well. And, you know, it was a very big part of everything. For me, number 11 is Paul Ellering. Again, you know, Robbie's kind of said it, you know, going all the way back with the Legion of Doom, he kind of upped their game. You know, without Paul Ellering, we don't get Rocco. So, you know, gotta love Rocco the Dummy. All right, Steve, you're number 12 or 11.
My number 11 is the Doctor of Style, Slick. Dude, that song came on in the 80s, and no matter who you were, it was a vibe. It was awesome, dude. That song came on and you just started jumping around, dancing in your living room, no matter what you were doing. And you knew that obviously what you were going to get big dudes that couldn't talk. So they needed a mouthpiece, and Slick was the perfect mouthpiece for him because he was great at embellishing everything and made these larger than life talents even larger. And obviously managed champions along the way. Who can forget, you know, people like the Twin Towers. It's awesome stuff.
Steve, never forget. Rob, you're number 11.
Let's not forget about Teddy Long. He guided big guys like Ron Simmons, Butch Reed, Sid, was successful in molding people like Mark Henry and Rodney Mack. So he's on my list.
Wow, Rodney Mack reference out of nowhere. Hello.
Nice. White boy challenge.
All right. Rob, you're number 10.
My number 10, we're going to go to Captain Lou Albano. You know, if I'm not mistaken, he was a big deal with the Dynamite Kid, David Boy Smith, yes. And Vince McMahon, once he added him to the list, the Bulldogs were really great. He also helped with the Wild Samoans, the Head Shrinkers, Andre the Giant, Snuka, even Hulk Hogan at a time. So... And on a personal note, I'm from Westchester. So if you lived in Westchester County, New York, you cannot forget all of the crazy Captain Lou Albano commercials for the tire ads or for the Chinese restaurant. I can't remember the name of it right now, but the famous line, "I need a Kumho tire. What is it? I don't know." And he's standing in front of an abandoned Caldors, which became Kohl's, screaming that he needs help finding a tire. That and bringing Cyndi Lauper into wrestling. When I was a kid, 1985, watching, you know, WWF and seeing her in the ring, and I'm like, why is she there in the ring with him? Oh, he's the dude from that music video. So he brought wrestling and made it mainstream. He bridged a gap, and that's a huge deal.
Steve, your 10.
My 10 is the man behind the Four Horsemen, J.J. Dillon. J.J. Dillon is, yeah, he was synonymous with 80s excellence in professional wrestling. He was the guy, the true architect that allowed the Four Horsemen to run rampant over NWA and later into WCW as well. So he definitely belongs on the list.
And my number 10 is the Queen, Sensational Queen Sherry. Man, you know, just going from wrestler because they didn't have anything for her, to managing the Macho Man and just creating something that was fresh and amazing. You know, having her with Sean, you know, up Sean's game into making him a single star. And then she goes to WCW, and man, Harlem Heat, Sister Sherry was the perfect person for that. Again, another one who was gone a little too soon. Just amazing. My number 9 is Mr. Fuji. Again, the infamous Mr. Fuji. Without him, we don't get Jesse Ventura saying Pearl Harbor job, or Gorilla Monsoon saying Pearl Harbor job. You know, one of the things that for all that he did as, you know, in-ring managing stuff, Fuji Vice on the old TNT show with Don Morocco, other episodes of Fuji Vice were just amazing. The guy didn't speak English very well at all, and yet was so beloved in that company as a wrestler that the transition was just, it worked beautifully. And he wore a fucking tux. You know, he dressed like Odd Job to the ring, which you'll never see again. Number 9 for you, Steve.
Number 9 is Gary Hart. Obviously, if you look at the names that this guy managed, Bruiser Brody, the Great Kabuki, Muda, Terry Funk, Abdullah the Butcher. I mean, this guy was the quintessential heel manager in the 80s, especially in Texas and the surrounding areas, world class into NWA, into WCW. Yeah, Gary Hart, without a doubt, deserves to be on this list.
And you, Rob.
Where are we at? Number 9?
Number 9.
Number 9. Oh, actually, yeah, I was going to say Ric Flair. Ric Flair for me was a big one. He was really big. You could almost call him a manager in Evolution, where he's guiding the careers of Batista and Randy Orton, as well as tagging with them. And then he gets onto TNA and creates Fortune, which is supposed to be the next generation of the Four Horsemen, and launches a lot of great careers. And even inadvertently, or maybe directly, Jay Lethal gets built up, because Jay Lethal is kind of like a proxy being managed by him. When you really get down to it, but Frankie Kazarian, Bobby Roode, Lance Storm, all of these people, I mean, James Storm, all these people have so much to be grateful for in TNA because of Ric Flair.
Absolutely. Let's see. Number 8 for me, Jimmy Hart, the Mouth of the South. You know, for what he, of course, did, you know, as a heel manager in Memphis, you know, the Andy Kaufman stuff that ended up happening with Lawler, You know, Jimmy managed Andy through that whole thing, traveled with Andy, and really made that whole scenario work. Comes to WWE and manages right out of the gate King Kong Bundy before he sold Bundy over to Heaton. You got the Hart Foundation coming out of that. You got Adrian Adonis. You know, then you had, Greg Valentine show up with Jimmy. You had just such a great mix of people, the Nasty Boys. And then he manages Hogan. And goes into WCW and, you know, has his stuff with Hogan and then, you know, turns on the Hulk. But from that point on, we realized that he had a lifeline, you know, from that point on, the rest of his life has been a friendship with Hogan that has been a partnership in business, essentially. One of those people you can't forget, the theme music that he wrote. Coming from being a musician in the 60s, just absolute amazing. Rob, you're number 8.
Well, I was going to put in their MVP because he put in so many, put over so many people. When we had the Hart business, what we think about now with Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley, you've got to go before that and even go to the Beatdown Clan, where you've got so many great guys like the King of the Night, Kenny King. You've got Samoa Joe on that list, low-key. And he's fighting. He's not just being the side guy and the hype man. But to me, he's like the Black Paul Heyman. He's quick on his feet. He can improvise on the mic. And he can actually put over the other guy by making them elevate to his insults. And that is an art that is really lost. I mean, a lot of these people came out and they had great outfits or costumes, but to be able to have fluent mic skills is something that only a handful of people have.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. Number 7 for you, Steve.
All right. So for me, it's going to be Sensational Sherri. You had mentioned her time with the Macho King, obviously her time with Harlem Heat. Of course, she did numerous things in the 80s that can't go without mention as well. But she was somebody that, again, took a valet position and elevated the entire thought of what a valet could be. So that is something that she did, not just, you know, for one act, but with numerous acts and across several decades as well. So that's something truly remarkable.
Yeah, my number 7 is Gary Hart. Like you said, Steve, all those names, one of the best heel managers in the history of wrestling and one of the smartest minds. And, you know, WCCW was something else because of Gary Hart. Unfortunately, it would have been great if he would have gotten the opportunity to be a full-time manager in the WWF, during that main run, but never got the opportunity. All right, how about you, Rob? You're number 7.
All right, well, let's go there with Ted DiBiase then. So Ted DiBiase was a manager who utilized his wealth and influence to manipulate wrestlers' careers. Don't forget about the million-dollar corporate stable, which included King Kong Bundy, Psycho Sid, Bam Bam Bigelow. And name is eluding me right now, but he was even managing guys over at WWA. My mind went just blank right now. Tuesday night. Yeah, right. he was managing. Oh Christ!
Oh, are you saying NXT?
NXT, yes, he was
even Cameron managing. Grimes.
Mm-hmm. He was even doing Cameron Grimes. I completely blanked out on that. Can't do this on just one brand muffin.
All right, Steve, who you got for your next one? What are we on for you? 7 or 6?
Uh, believe six. So right. What's up?
Go ahead. Yep.
All right. So I've got to go with Paul Bearer at six. So Paul Bearer, obviously the iconic manager of the Undertaker and Kane. But of course, Percy Pringle was managing guys for decades before he got his break into WWE. So of course, doing his thing on the indies through various promotions, territories, I should say, sorry, indies, whatever. Realistically, you cannot have The Undertaker without Paul Bearer, and you cannot have Kane without Paul Bearer. Those two are WWE Hall of Famers because of Paul Bearer. He deserves to be on this list.
Right. And we literally can't have Kane without Paul Bearer because he
fathered That's him. What I'm saying.
Yeah. My number six is Jim Cornette, of course. You know, those feuds with the Rock and Roll Express and, you know, the Midnight Express and can't go wrong, but everything else Corny has done over the years and, you know, managing again, Yokozuna comes into play of, you know, having him manage him, but, you know, everything he's done for wrestling, you know, Jim was obviously one of the innovators, especially when he took that dive off of that platform, scaffold. Blew out his leg. Yeah, my God. Night of the Skywalkers. That was good shit. All right. Number six for you, Rob.
All right. I got to get back. I almost got a little off my list here. I don't know if, yeah, Jimmy Hart. I did not mention Jimmy Hart, best known for the Honky Tonk Man managing, also managed Hulk Hogan, King Kong Bundy, Greg the Hammer Valentine. That bullhorn, you cannot forget. He is just Hall of Famer with the bullhorn. You go, oh, wait, that guy, Jimmy Hart. Absolutely love him.
All right, number five for you, Steve.
All right, so number five is Classy Freddie Blassie. Obviously, it just the names that this guy managed. He did work with Hogan for a short time in the late 70s, early 80s. Obviously we all know about his work with Nikolai and the Sheik. Something that a lot of people kind of forget is Freddie Blassie managed Muhammad Ali during his 1976 bout with Antonio Inoki. So, that's huge. In addition to, again, you mentioned Maivia, Jesse, the Body, Mr. Fuji, George, the Animal Steel. Yeah. Top five for sure.
Yeah. My number five is Captain Lou. Again, along the same sentiments that we've talked about the captain. Captain Lou had, you know, before the wrestling album, a band put out an album of Captain Lou and them. Then, you know, after his WWF days ended, he becomes the only Mario in the history of Mario. I'm sorry. Shut it down. Nothing else in Mario Brothers lore. He is Mario and will always be. But the captain is one of the greatest guys ever and gotta love him. All right, you're five, Rob.
Well, we finally get to Paul Bearer for me. And we've talked about Kane. We've talked about The Undertaker. We also didn't mention Mankind because he always found a way to keep it without getting stale. How do you play that same character and bring in another wrestler from outside the fold and make him really interesting without having him say all that much? Because Mick Foley is very verbose, and now having him become this animal figure under the control of Paul Bearer, because he's now to the right of Kane, who was to the right of Undertaker, and just did an absolute job of staying fresh, even when they kept him fresh in a pile of cement and prayed over him and buried him. I mean, he, like, right up until the end, he always stayed relevant with that storyline, and it was just amazing.
Yeah, that's my number four is Paul Bearer. All those things, again, you know, just someone who, when he was introduced, you know, it just became the perfect mouthpiece. But also, you know, you set up another thing with the funeral parlor, and you had now him, you know, able to have the Undertaker have these guests on, and then you could have things happen. And, you know, in just the whole arc of those stories. And then, you know, Vader ended up teaming with Mankind when Paul was managing Mankind during that stretch, right before Kane came in. Yeah, you can't go wrong with Paul. Your number four, Rob.
Well, let's not forget Don Callis, or should we say Cyrus the Virus, who worked with Rhino and Jerry Lynn in ECW, gets over to TNA and starts becoming the heel manager, working with the likes of, you know, Kenny Omega, coming over to AEW and getting the freaking Don Callis family. Which, you know what, even though the members of that family may come and go like freaking toilet paper, he still is the star. And he and what's amazing with him is how dynamic he is. I mean, that was an accident that they split his skull open. And what does he do? He becomes an even darker version of himself, and he works with it. A lot of people would have spent $1 billion trying to get plastic surgery. He goes, no, that works into my character even better now. The guy is freaking awesome. And once your training wheels are off, he can go off and get rid of a Kenny Omega and then, you know, maybe pick up the Young Bucks that he dumped, or get rid of the Young Bucks that he dumped, go off and grab all of these other guys from AEW and make them a, well, semi-relevant faction as we're going these days.
All right, Steve, you're number four.
The mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. We've all talked about his contributions, but again, longevity in the position. He was great in the 80s, the 90s, and you know, you could say that that he contributed a lot in the music field as well, because yeah, some of those songs are still bangers, as you alluded to earlier.
Yeah. Let's see. Number three for me, Paul Heyman. Yep. Goes without saying, you know, all the stuff that Paul has done and what he continues to do, you know, doesn't get any better than that. Steve, your number three?
My number three is Jim Cornette. So, yeah, obviously the AEW guy putting Jim Cornette at three has to be some sort of sick sense of humor there. But in any event, his contributions cannot go unnoticed. He and the Midnight Express in the 80s revitalized tag team wrestling with the Rock and Roll Express. And yeah, he absolutely one of the greatest to ever do it. You had mentioned his time with Yokozuna. Also, something that some people might want to talk shit about, but he has been in a creative capacity in numerous promotions. So he's shown that versatility, whether you love his ideas or whether you're not a fan of him, he has definitely created some controversy and gotten eyes to product when it needed.
Yeah. Rob, you're number three.
Well, I'm going to piss people off, I guess. I did my math all sloppy and I had more names on here than I originally thought I did. So I had a log jam at number three. And I found myself down to Eric Bischoff and Bobby the Brain Heenan. And I know how big Bobby the Brain Heenan is, but Eric Bischoff made fucking 90s, early 2000s, well, 90s wrestling cool with the fucking New World Order. That was great what he was doing with that. Great how he was, you know, bringing in these guys that we loved in the 80s and then adding to it, having split off factions. Everything that he did really made New World Order WCW. It overtook WCW. If you remember back then, it was New World Order versus WCW. He really was an innovator in a very major way, and he's commentating while his guys are out there kicking everyone's ass. So I loved it.
All right. Let's see, Steve, where are you at? Are you at three or two right now?
I am at two.
All right. Who's your two?
All right. So my number two is Bobby the Brain Heenan. Obviously, often regarded as one of the greatest managers in the history of the business. Realistically, you can't say enough about what this guy did. Even in, you know, the days of Georgia Championship Wrestling, all the way through to his people that he managed in WWF, even, you know, Nick Bockwinkel, Mr. Perfect, Andre the Giant, Harley Race, Ric Flair, and then you've got the Brainbusters, you've got the Colossal Connection. So he constantly revitalized himself, and he put himself out there and wasn't afraid to be that, that cowardly heel that ultimately gets his comeuppance. And it was so gratifying seeing the Ultimate Warrior beat the shit out of him in the 1980s and then in the 90s, early 90s. So yeah, Bobby Heenan, honestly, he's 1B on this list. I can't go 2-1. I got to go 1B.
Okay. Rob, who's your two?
Well, yeah, Bobby the Brain, I don't think I was able to give it a proper explanation as best as you did, Steve. So my number two that was concrete for me was Jim Cornette. Mr. The Tennis Racket is always in my head. It's a first look. One of the earliest memories I have of wrestling is this guy in his weird leisure suit walking around a tennis racket. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, I didn't understand what wrestling is. And that's one of the first guys I see. And then you have Camp Cornette, Owen Hart, Vader, the British Bulldog. Made sure these guys weren't lost in the WWE shuffle. And his big thing was the Midnight Express, an old NWA, as you guys had mentioned. And he was a mouthpiece for Bobby Heenan and Dennis Condrey. And, you know, Mid-South and world-class, you know, championship wrestling. Yep, you mentioned Yokozuna and that whole scaffolding thing. But I still just remember this fucking weirdo walking around with these boxy glasses and a tennis racket. I won't ever forget that. A great early memory of wrestling.
My number two is Classy Freddie Blassie. Absolutely one of my favorites of all time. Again, you go back and you watch the old TNT show. The Tuesday Night Titans, man, just some of the stuff on there, and you know, the way that he would just call everyone pencil neck geek, and it's funny because of the fact that here was a guy who was so revered as a heel, as a wrestler, especially in Japan, you know, when he makes the transition to a manager, again, it's, you know, the dressing to the nines type thing and just kind of being this flamboyant Hollywood type guy. And it just worked perfectly, which leads me to my number one, Bobby Heenan. You know, here's this guy who was from Indiana, but, you know, his whole gimmick was Beverly Hills. And, you know, he sold it, you know, for a guy who was not much of a pro wrestler in terms of going farther. His ability to wrestle was the thing that was key to him as a manager, being able to take the bumps. But his, you know, his ability to manage and commentate, and basically, you know, there are shows out there. I think WrestleMania 7, I believe, is one of those where, you know, Duggan, or I think it was Duggan, someone did the first match, and then Heenan came after he managed and you know, did the rest of the show. But that was the thing, you know, the guy could, you know, fill in on commentary or then, you know, go down to the ring and manage. Who could ever forget, you know, him wearing a neck brace for months on end because his neck was all messed up. And And then, you know, his, it's interesting when you have guys who have chemistry. You know, Heaton worked so good with Gorilla, but he worked well with Shivani as well, which lends the fact that he was such a good mind for the business that he could, you know, eventually transition out of managing when he physically couldn't do it anymore, and kept himself relevant, and you know, is one of the best commentators as well as one of the best managers of all time. All right, Rob, you're number one.
My name is Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman said something really great. He goes, when I'm mad managing somebody, I was trying to think about how to go about doing it. And the way I see it is I'm that guy who's egging on the bully. And because I got the bigger guy behind me to beat him up. And that's how he plays it. He plays it as that scumbag to just riles people up. He was born in Scarsdale. He's a Westchester guy like myself. I just love that whole freaking New York attitude behind everything he does. He doesn't hide it. He leans into his persona. The leather jacket, the ponytail, the oversized cell phone. And coming out as Paul E. Dangerously. That's the most ridiculous name, but it's funny as hell. And he sells it. He sells it as that freaking 90s cocksucker. I can't describe it any other way. That attitude that this is the slimiest guy that you're going to meet right out of New York City. Every stereotype imaginable. And who does he have under his name? He's got seven champions, The Undertaker, Big Show, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, Rob Van Dam, and Roman Reigns. And not just Roman Reigns, but the entire freaking bloodline. So that means you got the Usos, Solo Sikoa, Sami Zayn in that mix as well. The guy is dynamic, and every few years he comes back and reinvents himself. And if he's not managing a handful of wrestlers, he's managing the entire developmental of a company, whether it was growing ECW or them being picked to write for WWE and get their creative going. And they fire him, and guess what? He comes back and reinvents himself as this manager for the bloodline, and he is a famous, famous name. You cannot, as soon as you hear, hello, my name is, you know exactly what the hell we're talking about. He is the manager that people of all generations know. He is a generational manager. A lot of these other guys, you have to be really deep in the seat and watching wrestling or a fan of it or been studying it for 20 or 30 years. If I picked it up yesterday and watched Paul Heyman, now I'm enticed to want to go back in time to watch ECW because they keep referencing ECW. So now I'm going backwards to watch all of the other things he did. And as you go further back in time, it's not aged out. Watching some of those ECW productions that he was responsible for putting out there is basically the backbone of everything that we're watching today. Everything today is a watered-down version of everything that he did in the 90s. So you do not have the type of programming and hardcore matches today without Paul Heyman. And we don't get to put these people. What was Roman Reigns without Paul Heyman? If you take out the Shield and Paul Heyman, you've got this mush mouth who can't talk. You put Paul Heyman behind him, and now he's relevant. And what's the storyline? Without him, I'm useless. What's the storyline? Without him now, what are you going to do? What is Brock Lesnar going to do without Paul Heyman? So then he loses to Roman Reigns. So the guy makes people relevant, and then the storyline is, without me, you mean nothing. That is a great indictment of how great you are as a mouthpiece. There's nobody better that could talk up a faction. And think again about the WWE split in 2001, where you had the run-in from all of the ECW, WCW guys. I remember watching them like, wait a minute, why is all of the old ECW guys in the ring? And then you got Paul Heyman, you're like, oh, it's like a moment where you're taking a dump in your pants and you realize something big is about to happen. Paul Heyman moments are moments when something amazing is about to happen. You get a chill. When the camera pans over from Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman's just going, chills, because now you know you're going to be on an amazing roller coaster, because anything he touches is fucking incredible. And as much as it's about him, he takes all of the energy and puts it on the wrestler. the undisputed world WWE heavyweight champion. Who, and the acting he does. Oh, my guy is doing bad. My hair's gonna fall out and turn white. Uh-oh, the world is better again. The guy does, I mean, I love the method acting. He doesn't shave for 2 weeks. So he has his horrible beat up. I haven't slept in 2 weeks. Look, to go out there and promote the fact that his faction, his guy, the guy he's managing, the guy put all of his money into, his name behind is failing and it's causing him physical distress, that he's put this business over his own kids. And you get that. You believe it. That's why out of all of these people I mentioned, I'm the most excited about this guy, because he is that kind of loudmouth New York scumbag that I grew up seeing guys like him. So when I get to see him every week on my TV screen, you get a chill because you're happy. It's something you understand and know. He's like that mafia consigliere who happens to be Jewish, which is why he wasn't there Friday night. Some of the Friday nights.
Yeah. So all I got from that is...
dumping in your pants.
Dumping in your pants and how amazing it is.
Yeah.
When you're about to shit yourself.
It's amazing.
That's.
But when you hear my name is Paul Heyman, I don't want to say it's up there with Glass Shatters or The Rock, but out of a manager standpoint, how excited do you ever get to hear the manager's entrance? Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of managers that get that excited when they, oh, it's the manager? Yeah. Wait a minute. Like, is it Roman's Reign music, or is it, because what do? They lead off with him, not the other guy. My name is Paul Heyman. Brock Lesnar's music hits after. My name is Paul Heyman. The Roman Reigns stuff hits after. It comes after him because he's the attraction. He's the guy, because these guys can't cut a promo. So what is he going to do? He's going to cut the promo for you and the baby face.
Yeah. Okay. So Steve, tell us about your shitting your pants. I mean, you're number one.
Well, you know, Paul Heyman makes me shit my pants on the reg. So anyway, in any event, Paul Heyman is my number one. And I just want to put some things into perspective. So Paul Heyman is the only manager in professional wrestling history to manage three consecutive WWE champions: Brock Lesnar, The Big Show, Kurt Angle. That is a feat that will not be achieved again. Obviously, I'm going to throw out some names. Steve Austin, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, the Dudleys, Cesaro, Kurt Angle, Big Show, Mark Calloway, Mark Callis, The Undertaker, whatever. Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbysko, Rick Rude, Charlie Haas, Shelton Benjamin. The list goes on and on and on. Paul Heyman is the greatest manager in the history of professional wrestling. And we are so fortunate to be living in a time where we can see him on a semi-regular basis on our TVs. So we should all be grateful for that.
There you go. All right. Well, our apologies to Prince Nana. Sorry that you didn't make any of the lists.
He gets honorable mention for the best dancing manager.
Yeah, possibly. But we'll keep you in our thoughts for our top 50 managers coming up next year. When we scrape the bottom of the barrel to figure out who else we can just cram in there to make content.
And realistically, the bottom of the barrel, this is not even close to the bottom of the barrel. So we could easily do a top 50 if we actually, you know, sat down and tried to figure that shit out.
Vince McMahon, and I know about cramming things in tight places.
You fucking would.
All right. Well, speaking of shitting yourself, there you go. All right, everyone. That was our top managers list all time. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. If you're just tuning in now, enjoy the holidays, no matter if this airs at Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year's. Or
don't forget Kwanzaa. It's still a holiday legally for 2 more months.
No, Prince Nana. Not Kwanzaa. It's Nana. All right. Have a good one, everybody.